everyone, this is Amber Love from AmberUnmasked.com. Welcome to Vodka O'Clock. And today I'm joined with Amy Chu and Georgia Lee. We're going to talk about making comics. And welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm actually not drinking vodka right now. I'm drinking some hot tea because it went from 100 degrees to 60 somehow. So, Jersey weather.
I can get some vodka.
Yeah. It would be a little bit warmer. So, I have Amy.
All seasons and all times of the day, right?
It is vodka o'clock pretty much any time here. So I have Amy and Georgia here. We're talking about making comics, and Amy and I know each other because we workshop together about making comics. Georgia, what's your history with comics? How did you get involved?
Well, I've always loved comics, although not necessarily the superhero kind. But I guess I really started getting earnestly involved when I took, and I didn't know that you had also done Comics Experience, or the workshop, right?
Yeah.
And that's actually how I got started. I think Andy Schmidt is to blame for all of this.
Okay, we can blame him. I'm sure he won't mind.
I took the intro to writing comics, my God, several years ago now, and just loved it. And then went on to take the intro to art class, roped Amy in, and
I'm going to blame George and not Andy for ruining my life, but okay.
Yeah, it's like we're doing a commercial for Andy, but yeah, no, really, it was what I think really ignited the passion.
Okay, what kind of comics did you read before that?
I guess I'm much more of a Sandman kind of girl.
Okay.
And Why the Last Man kind of girl, and Fables.
Well, yes, I've been told that Vertigo was the girl line. So.
Yes, <that's right. laughs>
I'm like, well, it's true because I love all those books, so I couldn't really argue that.
Vertigo girl, yes, yeah. I mean, but I love, you know, Monk. I love, Lone Wolf and Cub type of thing. Let's see, what else? Well, Amy introduced me to the Greg Rucka Stumptown stuff.
Okay.
Kind of all over the map a little bit. But yes, definitely, I think I started with Vertigo stuff. Yeah.
Amy, what are you reading? I saw you tweeting about that you're in love with Scott Snyder or something along those lines.
I'm in love with Scott Snyder or his work? Both. No. I have been catching up. I mean, if you want to know what I bought today, I was just in my store, and I picked up the latest Rachel Rising and Batman number 8. I'll read anything that I've heard is good. I'm just trying to learn the storytelling. It's true. I think I probably my Vertigo is the Vertigo titles are probably the ones that I read first or before for a while. And I should go all the way, this is going to date me terribly, but the first comics I ever read were probably the actual first comics from that line back in the 90s.
Okay. It's not too bad to date yourself because, I mean, I talk to people about watching Dark Shadows in black and white, so.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
It's okay. I've switched more to trades, so I literally have 2 books on my pull list. I went from like 30 books down to 2.
Well, it gets expensive, and it takes a lot of time.
Yeah, it certainly does. But I mean, it's a new sort of path to be involved with comics now in the making of them and in the process.
Right.
So you guys got together, what was this, just like you were bantering and chatting and all of a sudden you decided, hey, let's make an imprint?
George, I mean, you want to tell the story?
Yeah, I think this was now, I think it was September or October of 2010. So now almost 2 years, well, a year and a half ago. And we were up in Cambridge, Massachusetts for a conference and Amy and I were sharing a hotel room. I think we were up late when night just talking about things we're passionate about, and again, I think I'm the one to blame.
You are the one to blame. I remember this.
Okay.
I pass on the virus. And yeah, that I always, well, I guess first and foremost a filmmaker, and that how I just thought the similarities between filmmaking, especially the storyboarding process, and the comic book visual storytelling, that there were a lot of, you know, it's not a perfect overlap, but the Venn diagram is very, you know, there's a lot of overlap, and I thought it was very interesting. I've always loved comic books. That wouldn't it be cool to be able to actually, because in the film world, you know, you might have a great idea in your head for a story, but the odds of actually...
It's a different ball game. You're talking about a huge
yeah.
team.
Yeah, exactly. And so how cool it would be to be actually see your idea externalized and realized. And so that's, I think, how we got started. Amy, is that right? Am I remembering correctly, or was there alcohol involved?
I think that was, you know, there was alcohol involved that night, but I don't think it factored into the decision. I think that because George and I were friends, and we both went to business school together, and we saw a lot, you know, just a really great opportunity to start doing comics, because I come from a sort of business strategy biotech background, where if you are starting a business in that space, you're talking several million dollars to do something, to realize a vision, whereas comics is like, wow, we can actually realize our creative visions for a lot less than that. You know?
Yeah.
So, and I think George is probably regretting choosing me as a partner, because I was supposed to stay on the business side. And I'm sure she probably thought that was a very safe choice, since I had no aspirations to be a writer. I would just do the business plan. She told me to take Andy's writing class so I could understand, you know, that creative process. So, but that's basically when I got hooked on comics.
And you didn't stop there. I mean, you've taken every class, which is my goal, my dream. If I ever, you know, win the Mega Millions, I'll take every one of the classes. But
you can definitely do it. It's I think it just makes you much better in terms of putting together comics. I mean, it's writing is one thing, but understanding everything else. And maybe I went a little overboard. I don't know. But it was
an experience. Yeah, I definitely want. Yeah, if. With the time and the money, I'd love to take all the classes too. Yeah, because I think it's so important to understand all the different aspects. I had no idea before I'd taken the intro to art course. When you write, you know, the lady jumps out of the car and throws her scarf, you know, over her shoulder, and you think that's all going to happen in one panel.
Right.
You know, you have until you're forced to actually draw that panel, you don't understand issues that the artist has to go through. And so I think it makes you a better writer, makes you a better editor. Yeah, having a whole holistic approach.
And honestly, I was looking at it as an investment. I mean, taking a lettering class, I mean, we saved money because
sure.
I was lettering. And coloring, not quite there yet, but I could flat if necessary. And I think it helped a lot when we were doing we've done, what, 3 books now, that I can work with the colorist much better. I think we, in the end, it saved money for us.
That's great. When you got together as a partnership and you came up with the name Alpha Girl Comics, Amy and I had been discussing just preliminarily yesterday about what does this mean, Alpha Girl Comics? Or is it somehow exclusive to female creators? And then, but then you see your credits and all the artists that you have are, you know, you have, you know, lots of men that you're teaming up with as well. So what is the purpose of saying this is Alpha Girl?
Well, that's kind of a deep question, right? I mean, let's think about it. We picked it partly because it's a little bit tongue in cheek. I mean, we are Alpha Girls. We thought it would be kind of a descriptive of us, but also attractive to the readership. You know, you can interpret it how you like, but we don't want to be exclusive just to women as readers and as creators, but we want to be female friendly.
Yeah, and right. I think the title is somewhat tongue in cheek, but I think part of the reason we were excited also to start an imprint was that we did feel, I mean, Vertigo is very female friendly, I think, but that there was an opportunity in to create more content for a female audience and stuff that we like to read. So I think that was partially behind Alpha Girl, but certainly it's not meant to be limiting.
And I think that's a good point, though, that you bring up, that it's just female-friendly, because when I read through Meridian City, you've got a female lead character, but it's a very, like, Buck Rogers science fiction kind of feeling. So, you know, it's just the feeling that, you know, all of us, it's sort of like we keep banging our heads against the wall thing, but we like, you know, swords and dragons and science fiction too. And
Yeah, we're definitely into promoting positive, you know, female role models in the stories. So I don't think you're ever going to find a story really that we produce that's going to be just kind of like all the guys hanging out. It's, you know, our job, I think, is kind of filling a little bit of a vacuum in what we're seeing out there. I mean, Terry Moore does a fantastic job with women. There's so many other creators, but, you know, we really want to get these stories out there. And they can be by men or women, but, you know, ultimately we want a good strong protagonists that are not going to end up in a refrigerator.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm looking at, I have up on my computer here on a post-it for myself. It's a quote from, well, Seymour Glass, you know, in Catcher in the Rye says, you think of the book you'd most like to be reading, and then you sit down and you shamelessly write it, which is, I think, how we feel about Alpha Girl, which is we're writing the comics that we would want to read, which I think just organically happen to feature complex, strong female characters. It doesn't mean that those are, you know, we only expect a female audience, but that's just naturally, I think, they're the characters we gravitate towards.
Amy, in your book, you've got a series of short stories that are independent. It's called Girls Night Out, but that's the title of your first story in it as well. And you did this, you put it together, you've got beautiful teams. I mean, really, I loved it. Did you get scared at all thinking I'm going to put all of these non-related stories together in one book?
No, not at all. I really, that's a funny word. It didn't occur to me to be scared. To me,
it doesn't get scared.
Should I have been scared? No.
I'm the one who gets scared. Amy doesn't get scared, which is why we're good partners.
I don't get scared easily. You know, if it's scary, there's something wrong. I would redo whatever it is. I mean, whatever, that's never occurred to me to be scared, but...
You're pretty fearless.
No, it's
yes.
To me, it's short stories. I just want to show a full range of you know, that I just thought these are great artists. Why not put it all together in one book? So
now, how let's talk about, we were talking about the business aspect, how you guys come from business backgrounds and everything, and Amy managed to find a creative side as well. So what marketing, you know, golden treasures are you finding about getting your comics out there?
Whoa, I wouldn't call them treasures.
We're going to pretend they are.
Very interesting to me, having worked in different industries. I mean, comics is actually not that different from a lot of other businesses, but there's a lot more, there's some opportunities here, because I think that creators have, you can do a lot more with comics, I think. I think people have to think a little bit out of the box when they're self-marketing, and that's the challenge. And, treasures. You know, social media, I think, is so important now, and I think that's a treasure right there. Before, you used to have to... you know, employ and do all these things in print, and, you know, social media is inexpensive. It's free, you know, and that's a great way for a creator to get their word out there and to develop a fan base. The other sort of quote unquote treasure, I think, for people is
the technology is so different now. You don't have to do offset printing. You can do print on demand. It's going to be so much cheaper for you. And, of course, the digital format. So all these things combined, it's just really a terrific time to self-publish. I'm not talking about if you're trying to get into one of the big two or IDW or Dark Horse, but if you want to get your stuff out there and you're committed, this is a great time to do it.
And what's the response been like? Because you got back from C2E2 only a few days ago, so what were you tabled there?
I shared a table with another comics experience person, and it was probably my first real tabling experience. We did New York Comic Con, but that was kind of just dipping our toe in the water, sharing a table with like 8 other people.
15, yeah. I was gonna yeah.
It wasn't
that.
Really, it was kind of more like a gang approach there. This is the first time we're committed to actually being at the table. And I'll tell you, it's not great for sales, but it's great for PR. I mean, I had some great response in terms of people just coming up. And honestly, I could have probably done a better job of getting the word out. But given that I didn't really even submit a press release or do anything, you know, I got some bloggers. Axel Alonso came up, bought a book, was very positive. I mean, we, you know, overall, a great weekend.
And what do you have Boston next?
Boston next, and then MoCA, the MoCA Fest in New York, so we'll be there.
And Georgia, do you hit the conventions as well?
I'm actually hanging my head in shame because I was supposed to be at C2E2, and
she failed me.
I got called away to LA. I'm still apologizing. Yes, and I am in the doghouse. I'm really bummed I missed C2E2. We went last year. We had a fabulous time. I will definitely be at MoCA, definitely New York Comic Con in October, and hopefully San Diego. But yeah, I'm bummed I missed C2E2. So hopefully I will see you, Amber. You go by Elizabeth, right?
Either. Doesn't matter.
Will you be at MoCA?
Probably not. I'm pretty much sticking this side of the Hudson. So basically like Philly and, you know, smaller Jersey events. But unfortunately, the biggest thing is probably going to be Wizard World Philly for me.
When is that? We should definitely.
Yeah, we'll definitely. You know, anything in the tri-state area, I think you can count us being there in some way.
That is, I believe it's like the last day of May, and then the first day or two of June. One of my issues with that show is that they've made it 4 days.
Ooh, that's tough.
Wow. Yeah. And that seems absurd for a smaller show.
Yeah,
and you cannot compete with Reed or with Comic-Con. And, yeah. I just think, you know, everybody, Wizard in itself is just so full of controversy at this point with the community. But, I mean, it's a fun show. I had a great time last year.
Well, I've heard good things about the Philly Wizard show more so than other cities, and I'm not sure why that is, so...
Yeah, so, I mean, that'd be great if you guys can get to that. We can have a little comics experience reunion there as well.
Okay, we can do the girl thing.
Yeah. Georgia, in your story, Meridian City, you have, again, strong female character, as we said. She's a police inspector, but it's like an outer space type of inspector, and yet not... at all similar in feel to Green Lantern Corps. It's very much a noir book.
Yeah.
And you've got 2 issues out. I just finished reading through 1 and 2, and I'm feeling the politics in this and how there's such a big distinction between the rich and the, I don't even know if you have a middle class or if it's just rich and poor. And or rich and working class, where I thought one of the coolest things that I ever saw was that you have a character that you said he's rich and he paid for his job position that a poor person should have.
Yeah.
And so where did that whole concept blew my mind, and I wanted to ask you about that. Where did that come from? What, you know, is there something you're trying to say with this?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk economy, damn it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I love sci-fi. I mean, Blade Runner and Battlestar Galactica are like probably my favorite movie and TV show, you know, and I just love sci-fi, but I love sci-fi purely for the fun of it, but I also love it because it's a great metaphor to talk about current themes and issues, right? And I was inspired by the idea that there might be a planet where you could only live within this very, very thin ring that was temperate enough climates, and then what kind of society would arise from that kind of planet. And it reminded me very much of Manhattan in New York City, and how people who live closer to Central Park are the haves, and people, yeah, the more distant you are from the meridian, the primary, the center, it's like a direct topological correlation to your economic status. And then I think a lot of this was going on during, a lot of my thinking was brewing during the financial crisis, during all the discussion about the 1% and the growing disparity of wealth. These are all issues that this sounds really boring, but I'm actually very interested in macroeconomics. I'm Chinese and have been spending some time in China, and you know, the country itself is absolutely rising, but again, the disparity between the haves and the have-nots is so gaping that this would be quite shocking. That's an issue that I'm kind of passionate about, and I thought it's really boring to talk about it normally, but it might be fun if it's kind of wrapped in the sci-fi mystery. And the idea of very rich people paying money to have a quote-unquote poor experience. I knew some friends who paid like $4,000 a week to go to an ashram, where basically they deprive you. They don't feed you food. They feed you salads every day, and they force you to hike 15 miles a day. And people pay $4,000 to $5,000 a week for this privilege. And it's just fascinating, the whole idea of paying for poor experiences or paying for deprivation. So I think that's one of the things that got me thinking about that.
Yeah, that I think that's an interesting backstory to Meridian City, and the other thing that was so striking about it is obviously we're talking comics; it's a visual book. So here we work really hard on the writing and creating solid stories that you could read these straight through without any art and still enjoy the read. But when I got a look at the Meridian City artwork, it like I said, it is so pulp. And so classic, and I know that you've got, it's a different colorist than your penciler, so, I mean, just, do these people, they don't know each other, am I right?
Oh, they do, actually, and I'm so happy that you felt that the noir sensibility that you felt that, because that was absolutely what we were going for as well. Silvio, he goes by Silvio DB, he's a Brazilian artist, and his, the colorist is Cabral, we actually met Cabral through Silvio.
Okay.
And they had worked together, and actually Silvio insisted that we work with Cabral as his colorist. So those two guys have been working.
Well, he didn't insist, but he did suggest, and his work was fabulous. So, and you will see his, I met him in Brazil, in fact, and I saw his portfolio. I'm like, oh my God, why don't we try you out on some other stories? So
Cabral does pencils in one of yours, isn't
it? That was experimental. I mean, I looked at it, and he had some stuff, and I was like, well, why don't you try something besides colors? Let's go for the Huntsman Challenge together.
And if I may play favorites, I actually think the work he did in Saving Abby was like some of the most, like, it was really stunning work.
It was great. That was one of my favorites. My favorite story is to
ever. That was my first story for Andy Schmidt.
Oh, I loved it.
And when I read her script, I knew that the person that I was working with as a business head and editor was soon going to become a writer.
I didn't realize that. I was like, okay, does anyone like my...
Remember, I told you. I told you.
Let's talk about styles, because when we get into workshop or into class, we are given types of assignments or challenges, and One of the greatest things is to do panel descriptions in one sentence. And so I was wondering what you guys typically do, like what you think your style is, because you, like, when I look at page one of Girls Night Out and I see this amazing Art Nouveau style, and then when there was like one page in Meridian City where she's in a jail cell and it's broken up into three rows of four very small panels, but yet there's a column on the right, on the left, where the panels are joined somewhat. It was just, the layouts were simple and beautiful and clean. So I wondered what you think your individual styles are when you're writing your panel descriptions. Whoever wants to tackle that one first, feel free.
Maybe I'll let you go first.
Oh, man. Well, I kind of want to say, I think it has a little bit to do with our backgrounds. I mean, Georgia's trained in film. I actually studied architectural design in college, so I'm a very visual writer. And I also tend to leave a lot up to the artist. So when you're talking about the Art Nouveau feeling, that was all Craig Yeung. I mean, I basically gave them the bare-bones script, and I said, you know, if you like it, you know, go ahead with it. And that's what he came up with. So my style is very much minimalist. I leave a lot up to the artist. I try to give them enough to get a feel for what's going on, but I let them embellish. I don't do too much in terms of direction other than giving them a really good feel for the characters, but I don't really dictate, okay, here's the angle, or, you know, it's really much more about the feeling and the mood of the characters first, and then I let them take it from there.
Okay, how about you, Georgia?
I feel like this is a psychotherapy session. I have control issues.
Well, I was curious because with the film background, I don't know if she's doing, you know, I need camera shot pointing angled this direct, you know, so I'm very curious.
Right, exactly. And so I think when I first started out, not knowing how to work with, you know, not knowing, I had never worked with Sylvia before, my scripts were very, very long. Amy, I don't know if you remember, but like my descriptions for each page were actually several pages long, and with more detailed thoughts on angles and whatnot. And then I realized, I was so wonderfully surprised when I would get the work back, and it was better than I had imagined it in my own head. And he had been very creative with, I used to describe, you know, one long panel across the top, it would be very specific about all that. I got to the point where I realized if I give him enough free rein, he'll come up with better stuff than I could have thought of. It's kind of like working with a DP, a cinematographer, when you're the filmmaker, the director. You know, sometimes you have to let people do what they're best at. And so now when I write the script, I just say six panels, panel one, two, three, four. And if I have some vague idea of how the panel layout should be, I'll write that in. But I guess I trust him enough now to get 90% of the way there without too much direction from me.
So when you wrote this, did you already know who you were going to work with?
I'm trying to remember. No, I think
no.
Not she won. No, Amy found Sylvia.
Yeah, you okay. Did the script first, and then I looked for an artist that I thought would be suitable. In fact, I tried him out on Closure first.
That's right.
He did the artwork on my short story Closure that's also in Girls Night Out, and I thought he did a fabulous job. I said, well, are you interested in doing Meridian City?
That's great. Now let's talk about Closure, because we get to see that you switched it up here, where it's sort of more of it's a narrative, and we don't see the main character.
Right, no spoilers.
Right. I'm trying to not you know, certainly give it away, but it was a very emotional piece.
Oh, thank you. I'm flattered that you felt that.
And we can talk a little bit about the subject matter without giving too much away, but it was a military piece. So
yeah, it's
you wrote it with a male soldier, first of all, in mind.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
So when we talk about gender, identity, and relating to them, and you were talking about, you know, guys like Terry Moore and Greg Rucka who write women so well, did you feel that you had to sort of change any thinking at all?
That's interesting. Not really. In fact, this is the difference between Georgia and myself, that sometimes I feel like I can write male characters better than female characters. And I have no idea why that is, but, you know, that's this was actually not that hard for me to write more so than, like, doing a female character.
Yeah, I have great, I don't understand men, so it's hard for me to write men.
I don't know that I understand men, but it's the kind of story that I think is easier for me to write, maybe. In fact, let me look through. I think three out of the five stories in Girls' Night Out are male protagonists.
Okay. And I think one of the things that I hear from artists, and a lot of times I work with art students, so that might be the difference, is they'd rather draw women. They just find drawing women more enjoyable. The male body gives them a harder time. It's got harder lines very often when we're talking about drawing, like, the perfect ideal body anyway in comics that we usually see.
Well, maybe that's what it is for me, is that I think I just enjoy trying to sort of figure out the sort of male point of view. I don't know.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where one of my favorite mystery series, it's a female author writing a male lead character, and it took me many books to remember that it was a female author. I just kept forgetting. Like, it didn't. Like, the author was completely irrelevant to me.
Well, that's what I'm hoping for, I guess. I mean, it's not that I don't want to do women, but I guess it is a challenge, and I hope it's like gender neutral in that respect. That you're not thinking, oh, this is written by a female creator. What was that book that came out several years ago about the Memoirs of a Geisha? You know, people were flabbergasted that it really was a man writing that book, and you know, that's kind of what you want to get to at that level as a creator, that you forget who's actually doing it and you really believe in the voice.
Yeah, Memoirs of a Geisha was written by some
Arthur Golden, right?
Yeah, non-Asian guy in New Jersey. Yeah.
That's a switch, right? Well, it's interesting because one of the things that getting into someone else's head, I've talked to Jim Rugg, who writes this blaxploitation character called Aphrodisiac. And, you know, I'm like, Jim, you're this, like, tiny little white guy from Pittsburgh. I'm like, what was the thinking here? I said, did you have a problem? Do you feel unqualified? And he's just like, no. It was one of those things where he just felt that whether it's race, whether it's gender, it's just... He didn't personally have an issue with it, so I'm always curious what other people are thinking, because I wonder if sometimes I make my female characters too bitchy. You know, I don't know if that's like, oh my god, I want male readers to enjoy it as well. Am I making her too, basically a man with boobs, you know?
Well, I think that's a trick with, or the challenge to do strong female characters, is that sometimes the complaint is, maybe they're too bitchy or too, like, you know, people cannot identify with them. And it's not an easy issue to deal with. It's like, well, so that sort of brings up all sorts of other, you know, questions about how we view women. But that's a whole nother podcast, I would think.
We can do that sometime. Has being a parent affected your choices and stories?
Oh, choices of stories. I was going to say, it certainly has affected my work and being able to work. I have two boys, age 4 and 8, and choice of story, it is, in fact, it is right now. I was lucky enough to get a small screenplay script, and it is from a mother's viewpoint, and I felt it really resonated, and, you know, I definitely wanted to do it. So it did affect that particular work that I'm in the middle of right now. The other ones, like Girls' Night Out, was really, a lot of the stories were done for Comics Experience, so I was more focused on the logistics of the challenge. You know, what what the structure was supposed to be for the story. So I don't know that the subject matter was really affected, but I do feel that there's certain content that maybe I do understand better being a mom or a parent.
Yeah, I definitely think, like, we were talking about closure, and it's a, you know, it's kind of a family piece, family-centric piece. And, well, even in Girls' Night Out, because it's a very nurturing story.
Yeah, that...
It felt very motherly.
Oh! It was very family-related. The genesis of that particular story, it was when I was visiting an elderly relative in a nursing home, and that's really what sparked that idea. You know, that so there is a little bit of family in that, you know, and how the passage of time and getting older. So there is a little bit of that.
Okay, fair. Georgia, do you have children that you have to
deal with,
consider?
My husband doesn't count, right? No, I don't. I don't. I have a nephew and a niece, a 5-year-old nephew and a 9-month-old niece. No children yet.
So we'll be getting them their own crack addiction. I mean, comic addiction soon, right?
Well, the cute thing is my 5-year-old nephew had been flipping through. I mean, when he was 4, flipping through Meridian City. And he had asked me, and was, you know, on my case about when issue 2 was coming out. So, So I think we have an early convert.
Yeah, my kids are totally hooked on comics.
Early on, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they fully understand that it's kind of strange to have mommy be the comics person. And so they're totally like, yeah, our mom does comics.
You're going to be the coolest parent at career day, Amy.
You know, that's so funny. Yesterday, I was, like, accosted by the nursery school teacher. She had gotten wind that I was doing comics, and she was trying to get me to look at her son's portfolio.
You're kidding.
I was like, oh, my God. Never in a million years did I think this was going to happen.
That's right.
Now, let's talk about the project you have with, it's a museum, right, that you're working with? On something?
Oh, are you talking about the Museum of Chinese in America?
Yeah,
we did that a couple months ago. It was a kind of a charity. It was a fun project to work on. Yeah.
So what exactly was it? If you can explain, the details a little bit.
Oh, there's a wonderful museum in downtown Manhattan. It's the Museum of Chinese Americas, and it talks about the history of Chinese in America. And I happen to know, you know, some of the board members, and I have a long history with that museum. I volunteered there before. I know their work, and they do terrific stuff. And they were doing a big sort of fundraiser event. And normally, a lot of these nonprofits will do a program booklet for the evening, and it's the most boring thing in the world, honestly. You know, it's just thanking all the donors and talking about the history. And I was just having a chat with a good friend of mine who's on the board, and I said, well, why don't you do something different this time? Why don't, you know, she knew I was doing comics. I said, why don't you do it as a comic? Talk about the history of the museum and the exhibits, but do it in a more graphic format. And she thought that was a fabulous idea. So that's kind of how it started, and I remember having met this terrific artist named Louis Chin at Mocha Fest last year, and I thought his work was outstanding and perfect for this kind of thing. So I contacted him, and it turns out he's a big, you know, he grew up in Chinatown, he's volunteered there, and he loved the idea. So we totally collaborated on that. It was the most fun project ever.
That's great, because it sounds like you took something and you converted it and, you know, perhaps introduced people to the medium that wouldn't have normally seen it.
I think so, because I think it's comics is about storytelling. It's about, you know, imparting information, and I don't think it really occurred to anybody that, well, why don't we do it as comics? But it I think it definitely gained a new audience, and it came out so well. I was very happy with it.
And what are you working on now?
Oh wow! Well, for both of us, we're sort of embroiled in There's a lot of things in the hopper. We're excited. There's a couple names that we've talked to about doing some stories later on. So we got some series that hopefully will come to fruition. These are people who have done work with Marvel before. But I'm not going to disclose what it is. You just have to wait till we actually finalize it. I'm working on a steampunk western right now, sort of in the middle of that. And then, of course, we have a lot of things going on with Meridian City. Georgia, did you want to talk about any of your projects, or we sort of want to keep that under wraps?
Oh, are we talking specifically within the comic space or kind of in the creative space or both?
Both. But let's talk about, first tell me how many issues Meridian City has planned. Do you know?
Well, I'd always imagined it to be kind of 5 issues, and then that it could continue, but basically within 5 issues we would complete the story. There would be a satisfactory ending to the Cannon Hunter adventure. So 3 more issues to complete that, and actually we would like to have Dax. Dax has his own secret too.
Oh, good.
And there might be the Dax Centauri adventures as well. Meridian City is bubbling, and hopefully issue 3 will get out soon. Amy and I had talked about potentially my writing and creating, launching a new series, which would be, without revealing too much, I guess I like detective stories, kind of a supernatural detective story set in contemporary New York City, so kind of urban fantasy detective story. Strong female protagonist, of course. so that's that keeps me off the streets. So that's in the comic book space.
So are you guys doing any outside funding for this, or are you just, just digging into your own pocketbooks?
We're using Amy's husband's credit card.
Awesome. Can I use Amy's husband's credit card, too?
At a certain point, we're sort of bootstrapping and seeing how it goes. I think we have some opportunities to raise some money, and there's, of course, Kickstarter has been really good to a lot of creators. We might explore that space, but really just trying to work to, stay lean and mean as much as possible. So, and it's working so far, we're just hoping not to lose too much money at this moment, but, it's going. We've been very, very, very strict on our budget so far, which is why I took the lettering class. I was really hoping, and it's completely infeasible, that I would get reasonably good at art, that I could even,
Yes, we were both hoping that we could draw.
There's no way. infinite respect for artists. There's no, maybe 10 years from now, I might be, and if I drew every day, I might get half as good as some of these people, but...
Yeah, that's what it's like for them. I mean, art school is years and years, every single day, 10, 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
It's really like preparing for Olympic sports type of thing. So
I was thinking maybe I could do a web comic of an amoeba in a petri dish. And that is what, if it came down to that, I could do that.
But speaking of web comics, will you have something up on a single website, or are you just sort of tackling each project as it comes out individually?
Well, this is sort of getting into the business model that we're working out, that ideally the alphagirlcomics.com will be the portal for all our content, and that you should be able to download PDFs from there. But the reality is, it'll probably go up on Amazon very soon. The Amazon model is much better than some of the other things that we're looking at. We just want to get it out there as much as possible. So, I'm a print person personally, so I always try to make, we will always do some form of print unless it's specifically geared to web comics. I forgot there is an actual web comic I'm working on that I have not talked about and told Georgia, but, I've got it worked out. That would be fun just as an experiment, really, just as a creative experiment. I'm not looking necessarily to make money off of that one.
I don't think anybody makes money off webcomics.
I mean, it may be a traffic driver, and that would be nice.
Right.
You know, if they like the webcomic, they'll download Meridian City or order the print version. Be totally happy with that.
So when it comes to business ideas and plans, we were talking about marketing and stuff, how far are you taking it with, you know, some there's sort of either a minimalist version, or there's the, we're going to have t-shirts, we're going to have buttons, we're going to, you know, want to see everybody wearing something with our logo and Meridian City, you know, bumper stickers. I mean,
if that works, I mean, if it works, we'll do it. But I think at a certain point, it gets to be too much merchandising for a brand that, you know, it doesn't pay off. It's so, you know, we need to have the content out there first. I'm not going to try to merchandise the heck out of something that doesn't really exist yet.
I think that's something that writers get told the most when they ask for writing advice. As soon as they always ask the question, how do I find an agent? And the professional they're asking always responds with, what have you written?
Exactly. I think it's just, you know, we need to have stuff out there first. If people like it, that, you know, that's the real test, not whether we can, you know, of course, actually, Georgia already has an agent. I don't have an agent, but Georgia's been writing, you know, a long time, and she's got a body of work. She has her film Red Doors, you know, which has won awards. So, you know, she's got a terrific structure behind her, you know, people supporting her. I think what people forget is looking at readership, or, you know, people, viewers, readership, that you're missing a huge opportunity, I think, of international readers. So I'm more focused on doing different language editions of Meridian City and Girls Night Out to make it accessible to some great comics markets in Europe, you know, the Italian market, the French market, the Portuguese-speaking market. So that's kind of more where I'm focused, rather than getting T-shirts out and buttons and postcards.
I think that's brilliant, because we're always so expectant to get the European or Japanese material translated into English for us. Mm-hmm. And yet I've not heard of anyone doing the reverse of that when it comes to comics. Only with novels. I know that there are
a lot of
my writer friends have, you know, different language versions of
the story, and the artwork is there already. We just need to do the translation. And these are markets that really appreciate comics much more so in some ways than the American market. They appreciate the sequential art, the artwork itself, and also print. So I was just in Paris and I was in an art gallery, and it was like being in a temple. You know. Just for comics art.
Yeah, it is. They don't make the distinction as fine art versus comic art.
Yeah, it is high art. It is beautiful art to them, and they're willing to pay for it. Whereas here, you know, I feel terrible. I mean, sometimes I see artists out there. There's some amazing artists, and people are not buying their art. I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of times the medium is similar. Like, you'll see people that are still working in watercolors. You know, you're not going to see anybody necessarily doing a comic in something like oil paints, but with the Photoshop abilities and stuff, they basically replicate that. They have very painted styles.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia, where can people find information about who you are, about your film projects, about anything like that?
Oh, Amy always gives me a hard time, and a lot of I'm terrible at social media. I'm terrible at self-promotion. I am like the case study in what not to do to promote yourself. But I guess my film Red Doors is available on Amazon. It's available on Netflix. I believe it's even available streaming. And I should probably be more active about Facebook and Twitter. I think I've tweeted once.
Whereas I think I'm up to my 2000 whatever tweet.
I'm really bad, which is why I need agents and managers. Otherwise, I would never work. But in all seriousness, I'm shooting another film. I'm directing another film in Hong Kong in August, which is a horror thriller film, which I'm very excited about. And I am writing a television pilot for ABC Family, which is actually about a young female detective. I guess I really like detective stories.
So do I. I'm absolutely hooked, though.
Yeah.
You're my new best friend.
Yeah, well, I love, and I guess it's funny because I was just coming from a meeting where we were talking about how much we all loved, and this was, you know, a young guy. He must have been, like, 21-year-old guy who said how much he loved Murder, She Wrote.
I'm like, oh, what?
Murder, She Wrote. So basically I'm doing, like, Murder, She Tweeted, you know? I should probably get better about promoting the projects that I'm working on. Yeah.
we'll get people Amy's information, because I'm sure she will never ever hold back from tweeting about you.
See, yes, I should. I'm like, I should. Amy, I should give you like 10%.
Yeah, that's right. I think so.
You do have a joint Facebook page, though, with Alpha Girl Comics. It's the facebook.com/AlphaGirlComics. So everybody, I urge them to go over and like that.
Please like, because I am updating it on a regular basis. So if you want to hear about any of our projects or just random stuff that we both happen to like, you'll get those updates there. And then I do have a Twitter account. It's Amy Chu. And Georgia has a Twitter account. you're Georgia S. Lee, right?
I believe so.
Yes,
and
you are.
Promise to start. That's my summer resolution. Yes.
Okay. Well, do you guys have any last words that you want to embark on the public here? Yeah.
Oh wow. Buy our books.
And please like our site.
And please support the artists that have done, like, all this work for, you know, with us, because it really made such a huge difference. It's like one thing to just sort of write these scripts, but these stories really come to life with, the people that we work with.
Definitely. I think that's great advice. Always, always respect the whole team, you know, as a unit.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's something that is perhaps... Well, in film, it's definitely a very collaborative process. But I think directors are sometimes, we're allowed to believe we're God. But I think that, which is obviously not true, it's a very collaborative process. But I think definitely working in comics has been hugely humbling, because you realize how much the artists really are so hand-in-hand partners, you know, in creating the whole vision.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I will get to see you guys sometime soon around the metro area, and we'll have a little comics experience get together of some sort.
We'd love that. We'll definitely do the girls' night out.
I think that's a great plan. All right. Well, thanks everybody. You've been listening to AmberUnmasked.com. It's Vodka O'Clock. I've been talking with Amy Chu and Georgia Lee. I hope you guys have enjoyed this episode. And come back and hear some more.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thanks.